presence is not for sale. If that's true, it's the only thing on earth which isn't. A presence has to be given, not bought. So says the author John Berger in his 2001 book, The Shape of a Pocket. Once again, presence is not for sale. If that's true, it's the only thing on earth which isn't. For presence has to be given, not bought. Our continuation in the book of Genesis enters into very dark territory this morning. As if last week's passage about the expulsion of Hagar and Ishmael were not difficult enough to hear, today we hear the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. For many of us, it can be felt as a text of terror. For how can this be? We ask, how can this be that God, whom we understand to be the giver of all good things, could demand the life of a child in order to prove a father's obedience? Where is the good news in that story? What kind of a God would that be? Well, that actually is one of the questions at the heart of this passage. Because for as many ways as we can encounter this story, be it psychologically or theologically or relationally, a critical lens for us to understand this text this morning is anthropology. Knowing the context from which this story of horror emerges is essential to knowing why we must remain present with this text, as hard as it may be. For we must remember that of the many cultic religions that existed in the Middle East at the time of this story, several of them had child sacrifice as a central practice. So consider that now, with tribes and religions surrounding them, all practicing child sacrifice. Now read this story of Abraham and of Isaac climbing a mountain with wood and fire and knife. Seen in this light, some scholars have said that Abraham's faith consisted of not almost doing what he didn't do, but of not doing what he almost did. And not doing it in fidelity to the God whose name his contemporaries thought it should be done. Or more simply put, Pastor Brian McLaren has written, it was commonplace in the ancient world for a man to lead his son up a mountain to be sacrificed to his deity. It was extraordinary for a man to come down the mountain with his son still alive. Make no mistake, there still is terror in this story. But with this lens, in reading this text, I have the sense that alongside what we are seeing as an anthropological and a theological shift, we also encounter an enduring practice of faith in a world of change and of chance, that of presence. Within this understanding of an intimate relationship between parent and child, as I was spending time in this foundational text this week, what reemerged for me was a visceral memory as a parent of cries in the night. Because for several years, one of our sons had night terrors. You know, the fearful thrashing about and crying, and that helpless feeling that as a parent you know that your child feels trapped somewhere frightening and cannot emerge into consciousness. And so what we would do was we would climb into bed alongside him, and almost every time the first words out of my mouth would be, "Here I am, I'm here. Here I am, I'm here." Now, those words weren't magic, right? They didn't make everything always better. These words can't always dispel the fears that lurk in the darkness. But if offered with love and attention, real presence can shift what feels to be immovable. Here I am. This is that same phrase of Abraham's in our story from Genesis this morning, offered three times. Here I am. The first is when he is supposedly given orders from God, sending him and Isaac up the mountain. And then again, when Isaac asks him about where the sacrificial lamb is, and then finally in response to God as Abraham takes the knife to kill his son. Abraham, Father, Abraham, here I am. And so to move from this wide-angled lens of anthropology and into a close-up focus of someone attempting to be present where they are, Abraham this morning can offer us a simple and foundational phrase. When confronted by these changes and chances of life, by the deaths of those whom we love but see no longer, by the endings of careers that brought us meaning and focus, or by the diseases that force us to know the fragility of life freshly. When we are confronted by all that besets us, often the most faithful response is the simplest. Grounding ourselves in each moment with this phrase, here I am. When I was in high school, I was a member of a local symphony that toured Japan for a week or two, and as part of any good youth tour of a faraway place, much of our lodging was found in homestays with local families. And to this day, I remember scores of sessions after rehearsals when the conductor of our symphony would drill into us how we were to behave as guests. We were not only representatives of our group, but unbelievably, somehow, we became ambassadors for our country. Since I am now present on the other side of this coin, in about a month's time, once again, as one of the adult leaders of a group of high schoolers that are headed for a culture much different than our own, I have great sympathy for what she was attempting to instill in us. And one of the imperatives that I remember to this day was around food, because food is one of the primary ways that we as a culture express who we are, right? And so several of the meals on our tour were with our host's families, and we were instructed, or really ordered, that as hospitable guests, we were to eat whatever was placed in front of us with gratitude. And wouldn't you know, though, that the cultural surprise for me was not in the octopus tentacle or in the sea urchin, right? I was prepared for those. I ate those with relish. Now, it was in the night that one of our host families was really incredibly pleased to offer us a very special meal. And this is when I was shocked, because there we were seated on tatami mats, and we were served Kentucky Fried Chicken. But looking back on it now, with this gospel in mind, I think I understand what our hosts were attempting to do, which was to offer us a deep hospitality, one where the guest is made to feel as if they have come home in another person's house. It's a way of being present, isn't it? Offering of space and of material and of most importantly, of intent. To communicate to this other person, this stranger, that where they are welcome. That I am because we are. Now, in past reflections on this text, I have spent much of my attention considering what we do as a congregation to receive guests. And as far as I'm concerned, there is no end to that path. It's really more of a stance that we must always engage, always becoming aware of how someone new will encounter our space or hear our words experience our actions or see what we have left undone. But what I would like for us to pay attention to this morning, and especially in the weeks to come, is our presence outside of this sacred space. What we are sent to do and to be the other 6 days of the 7 lived with God. For this welcome of the stranger is not just about who we receive into our homes and how we create and hold space for them. It is also about where we go and what we do once we are there. Just as I was an ambassador of sorts as a teenager in rural and urban Japan, when we are sent out these doors every Sunday to our households, to our schools, to our work, to our communities, we are sent to be present. But present how? For whom? Here, scholar Eugene Young Chung Park is helpful when he reminds us that in the ancient world, the one who is sent represents the full presence of the one who sends. That means that when we show up with all of who we are, not who we think we are supposed to be or who we've been told we are not, but when we are all of who we are, attentive to another, with our presence, God is made present. Here I am. Next time you are frustrated in your commute or exasperated on tech support or stretched to your last nerve with your child, remember that you have been sent. Sent to be present. Sent to be the presence of Jesus. Sent with courage, boldness, and compassion. Here I am. As a parish family, we are in the midst of dynamic, course-altering times, and it isn't always easy. In fact, change never is easy. But it's my sense that we are now being offered new glimpses of who and whose we are. We are learning to leave space so that others can be present. We are opening our hearts and our minds to new possibilities. And in focused and courageous ways, we are being present to those outside our doors. Some of this being present, this embodied hospitality, can be found in practices that we have held for years, like our regular time spent in the Kayakamina nursing home, where welcome is offered by song and by sacrament and by simple physical touch. Here I am. Other ways are newer, like our Stephen ministers who show up over and over and over again, week by week by week, to be present with someone who is hurting, at a loss, or feeling without hope. Here I am. And then there are new ways that we are showing up, representing Jesus with the lost, the last, the least. In the past few months, several members of All Souls Parish have been present at the ICE Detention Center in Richmond, standing in vigil, praying, singing, doing all in their power to let those who are being held, those who are seeking asylum in this country, letting them know that they are not alone. Here I am. And at this time in our parish's long and rich story, we are listening. We are listening for where we are called to be present next. For make no mistake, friends, there are many, many in this neighborhood, on this sunny side of the bay and beyond, who are hungry, who are yearning for this presence. For there are many who have the sense of feeling disconnected, lonely, uncertain, adrift. And so I really wonder, if one of the most profound, one of the most radical, one of the most transformative statements that we might ever make, no matter who we are, or where we are, or who we're with, that with all of our being, we might simply say, here I am.